Welcome to Recalculating Small Business. Like its award-winning book, Recalculating is dedicated to small business in America. Your hosts are Don Mazzella and Dan Perkins. Don Mazzella is the editor-in-chief of the Small Business Digest. Dan Perkins is a registered investment advisor with 43 years' experience in managing money.
Dan Perkins here, your co-host, along with Don Mazzella of Recalculating for Small Business. Our radio program is dedicated to you, helping the small business owners increase their profits. We draw our name from Recalculating, voted the best small business book of 2017 by the Independent Press. In this book, it features ways to grow your small business. Now, here's Don Mazzella.
Dan, our next guest is the first person to bike across the Hudson River and San Francisco Bay. That alone made it important that he join us. His name is Judah Schiller. He is the founder and CEO of Schiller Bikes, and is here to talk about that and more. Judah, welcome to the program.
Well, great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, I'll ask the obvious question, Judah. How do you bike across the Hudson River?
Well, first you start with the bike. That's a key ingredient in biking, of course. This all started, you know, back in 2013 when the idea was born, doing a tour under the new span of the Bay Bridge connecting Oakland to San Francisco. And for the first time ever, there was going to be a new bike lane and a pedestrian path. But it would stop halfway across the San Francisco Bay and would take another decade and $500 million to retrofit the second span connecting the two cities. And that's where the idea went off. Wouldn't it be great to, you know, bike across a body of water? So what I ended up doing back then, this was before I launched Schiller Bikes, was I actually found a kit that was made by an inventor in Milan, Italy. And it affixed to, you know, a regular road bike or mountain bike. So that's what I started using, and that's what I ultimately used for these stunts to cross the Hudson River from Hoboken into New York City and from Oakland all the way into San Francisco. And along the way, just had so much fun doing it, and people seemed to really enjoy seeing a person bike on water for the first time in their life. And from there, just kept moving forward and founded Schiller Bikes in the start of 2014.
So for the benefit of our audience, what you really have is a bike that you can use on water.
Exactly. So the bike, with the Schiller bike, we have a bike frame. Anybody in the world would recognize it as a sort of modified bike frame, but it has, you know, a saddle and handlebars and pedals like every other bike on the planet. Now, ours also has four metal tubes that connect to the frame of the bike and also to two high-pressure inflatable pontoons. So what you end up having is a bike meets ultra-portable catamaran. So when it's fully assembled on the water, it's about 6 feet wide and 12 feet long. It's incredibly stable. Anyone from 8 years old to 80 years old, even older, regardless of athletic ability, can easily get on, and there's no balance issue. So even if you don't know how to ride a bike, you can ride on the Schiller bike and have a great experience.
Well, your website, Judah, before we go any further?
Sure. It's schillerbikes.com, S-C-H-I-L-L-E-R-B-I-K-E-S.com.
Okay. I have a lot of questions, but Dan, I'm going to let you ask your questions first.
Thank you. Judah, thank you for joining us today. I'm fascinated about your bike. I'm curious as to what kind of shape do you have to be in order to go across the Hudson River or the San Francisco Bay?
You know, remarkably, you don't have to be in fantastic shape. I think now I probably spend more of my time behind a laptop doing business and traveling, sitting on airplanes and then biking on water. It is really remarkably easy. We've had obviously many, you know, pro athletes. We've had Laird Hamilton, Michael Phelps, some really amazing athletes. But we've also had people who have just undergone, you know, spinal surgery that are suffering from Parkinson's, people, amputees we've had on the bike. So, you know, you really, because there's no issue with stability, all you need to do is move your legs and steer. You really, you know, athletic ability is not the, you know, and it doesn't really matter for riding the bike. Obviously, if you want to get fit, it's a great way to get fit. You know, out on the water, you're free from cars. You don't have any of the obstacles or hazards or dangers of biking on land. You're not wedged to the side of a road. There's no potholes. So it's a great, really relaxing, serene way to go out on a whether it's the Hudson River or the San Francisco Bay or, you know, any lake or river, canal, bay. It's great for almost any body of water.
You know, you kind of have a combination issue when you have the bicycle and you have water. Do you, because of the nature of being on the water, do you encourage people to go in pairs? And do they wear life vests?
So we do encourage everyone, like any small watercraft, and at the end of the day, this is a small watercraft, we encourage everyone to, you know, at least carry a personal flotation device on the bike. It's just common sense being on the water. We, you know, obviously recommend that people tell somebody if you're going out for a long ride, if you're leaving sort of the coastline, let someone know that you're going out. So just really practicing common sense. And obviously common sense means, you know, safety on the water, you know, whether it's a large sailboat or a large, you know, vessel, you know, just understanding who has the right of way, and it's always a larger vessel. But most of the time people are smart about riding.
How long does it take to put one of these bikes together?
So, you know, the Schiller bike really is an extraordinary machine. And I say that not just because of the performance attributes of our the S1C model, which is the bike we have on market right now. It's remarkably easy to put together. I mean, from car to riding away on the water is under 10 minutes. So the assembly is simple. You don't need any tools. And it's, you know, it's a great user experience. And when you're done with your ride, it's just a matter of minutes to deflate the pontoons, pull out the metal tubes, and the bike itself can fit in the trunk or backseat of most sedans. So you don't need a bike trailer. You don't need to, you know, put this thing up on your roof. You don't even need an SUV. So it's really, you know, a marvelous product.
So you've created a bike to work specifically with the watercraft.
Well, you know, listen, people, we make the bikes, and people, you know, our customers use them in so many different ways. Most people use them for recreation, fitness, exploration, you know, seeing the coastline in a whole new way, being able to, you know, instead of biking around the lake as we've all done for, you know, our lives, now you can bike into the middle of the lake. So it's just it's a surreal, sublime experience. To be cycling, you know, out on open water or seeing a city or sightseeing. And if you're close enough where, you know, you can cross a relatively small body of water like the Hudson, I mean, that's literally from Hoboken to Chelsea is, you know, mm-hmm. a 5-6 minute bike ride. So I'd take that any day versus driving up to the GW Bridge and sitting in traffic and, you know, driving all the way back down and looking for parking.
I understand. Is the bike, could the bike be used on land too, or just in water?
No, we made a key decision that we're going to be the makers of the world's best water bike. I'll leave it to somebody else to think about an amphibious bike, but that's, you know, when you really want to optimize for hydrodynamics, which was really the complex part of the engineering of the Schiller bike, it doesn't make sense to do both. There's plenty of bike makers out there.
Yeah. How do you distribute your bikes?
We have we sell direct to consumers from our website. We have a number of international distributors, a growing network of dealers and sales reps in 70 countries around the world, I think is where we have a customer. So we're really becoming, you know, a global brand and just seeing people, you know, having, you know, first, you know, amazing water bike experiences, whether it's in their country or state or town. But it's really a movement that we're pioneering with the help of our customers and building a new community.
It's like the old song that says, bicycle built for two. Do you have bikes for two?
So a lot of people ask us that, you know, do we have a tandem version of the bike? And one day we might have a tandem version. What we did in the interim, which I think is a really elegant solution. So the inflatables that we use are high-pressure inflatables. So they're about as rigid as a plank of wood. So you could have someone riding. I could be out riding, and I could have my 19-year-old son, you know, literally standing on one of the inflatables or sitting down and riding. We also have a high-pressure inflatable front deck that goes in front of the handlebars and spans across the two pontoons. That also is, you know, rigid. So a full-grown adult could stand on it. You can bring the dog. You can bring, actually, I've gone out with, you know, three of my kids and the dog. So it really, there's a lot of territory on the bike to bring passengers or camping equipment or just a cooler or fishing gear. So I mean, it's a really versatile watercraft.
So you can fish from this?
Oh, absolutely. And the nice thing is, you know, you can actually get out of the saddle. So because the bike is stable as a catamaran, it's effortless to go from a sitting position to just standing, whether it's for fishing or stretching your legs. But it's really fun and easy to cast out. And I do go fishing here in the San Francisco Bay, and it's a lot of fun. And then if you get a fish, I mean, you can literally get back on the saddle and either chase it down or, you know, the bike also does reverse pedaling. So you can really get some, you know, more muscle into pulling a big fish in.
So my wife, who thinks I can't afford a boat but needs me to have some aerobic exercise, this allows me to go fishing and get some exercise at the same time.
Absolutely. Just mount the rod holder onto the handlebars, and there you go. And again, plenty of territory for a cooler or for any kind of gear that you need. And you get a workout, too, and you get some, you know, real peace of mind while you're out there on the water.
So since my birthday's coming up, what would my wife have to spend to buy one of these bikes for me for my birthday?
We'll give your wife a great discount for a birthday special. The bike retails for $5,500. If you compare it to you know, the cost of a of a boat or of a motorized watercraft, or frankly, you know, so many bikes and the you know, road bikes and mountain bikes, $5,000 for a bike like that. You know, there are plenty of bikes that retail for, you know, $10,000, $15,000, even $20,000. All the you know, the new carbon bikes. And so what you're getting with this is you're not only getting a bike, but you're also getting a boat that you could take, you know, your wife out on, or the kids, or the dog, get a workout, go fishing. So, you know, when you think about this, is something you're going to use for years, and you're going to enjoy it for years, and you know, your friends can go take it out. No learning curve, you know, there's no lesson here. So I think that's a really great value. And when our customers get it, they are delighted to have it.
I'm not questioning. I was just realizing how I really don't understand the cost sometimes of aquatic hobbies. But you're right,
sure.
It's not. Judah, what happens when the wind kicks up, as it suddenly does on the water? How stable is it against a strong wind?
It's another great question. You know, it is remarkably better performing in the wind than, say, a kayak or a stand-up paddleboard, where you're having to paddle with your legs. And part of the reason why I think, you know, the Schiller bike is really so enjoyable and revolutionary in the water sports category, is that you're finally using your biggest muscle group. I mean, unless you're in a really serious, you know, kayaker or, you know, professional stand-up paddleboarder, I mean, everybody's quadriceps, you know, and your legs are stronger than your shoulders. This is, you know, same holds true, you know, for most women as well. So you're able to do a continuous rotary motion of the propeller. So, you're not limited to paddling. And so we go out, and, you know, San Francisco Bay is about as windy and as sometimes ugly in terms of the weather, as you can imagine. It gets pretty rainy, and it definitely has, you have, you know, 25, 30 mile an hour gusts around the Golden Gate Bridge area. And never had an issue getting back. You know, you put a little bit more muscle into it, but again, you don't feel it like you do when your shoulders are tired and you've been out paddling and, you know, you're kind of sore from sitting in a kayak. It's a very different experience.
Where am I? Back to you, Dan.
So the pedaling mechanism drives the propeller at the back of the boat or back
That's
of the bike.
Right. Exactly. So as you exert pressure on the pedals, you turn the pedals, you bike like any other bike. What we're doing is we use a Gates carbon drive belt. So we don't use chains. We use a specific belt. It's actually the premium belt system that's used on many land bikes as well. And it works very well on saltwater because it doesn't corrode in saltwater. So everything about the bike is made to withstand corrosion. We have a lot of customers who use this on saltwater just as much freshwater. So you turn an output shaft that connects to a gearbox that's sealed watertight, and inside is a right-angle gear. And that right-angle gear then connects to a flexible shaft that runs through a rigid foil, and that's the integrated steering and propulsion system. So you get directional thrust as you pedal and turn the handlebars. You're able to move in whatever direction you want.
Yeah, in many, many states, you have to have a license to ride a bike. Do you need a license, a watercraft license, or any kind of a license to use this bike?
I think you certainly need a license to use a boat. For a bike, the bike is classified like a stand-up paddleboard or a kayak. So it's not, it doesn't, at least to my knowledge, doesn't go over any hull length that might require licensing, like some, you know, canoes might require licensing. But it's also non-motorized, so this is completely human-powered. So we haven't seen anybody having to register their water bike in any state so far.
Is there a prudent distance that you should go out before you turn back on any bike, any your apparatus?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I would imagine it's the same when you're going out for a bike ride on land. You know, you want to make sure that you're fit enough to get back. Most people, you know, when they go out riding, you know, you go along, you hug the coastline. I mean, frankly, you see a lot. There's all, you see all the you know, whether it's cityscape or housing or coastline and beaches. And most people, you know, kind of tend to do a circuit. But then again, we've had one British adventurer by the name of Dave Cornwaite who biked 1,400 miles along the coast of Norway this past summer. It was the world's longest solo ride on, I think, any water bike, certainly our bike, and a great testament to the engineering of the Schiller bike. But it was a remarkable feat. So if he's able to bike, you know, 1,400 miles, I think the average day user will have no problem, you know, going out and coming back safely.
What's in that 1,400 miles? Did he have many breakdowns? What was the reliability?
Very reliable. No breakdowns. He had an amazing ride. He had all of his camping gear. He had a support team tracking him on land, but he was out there by himself. And camping by himself, you know, food and all his gear, in some pretty good swell and chop as along the Norwegian coast, you might imagine. And he did a phenomenal job and set a world record.
So I'll ask one more question, then I'll pass it back to Don. So how long have you been in business and how many units have you sold?
We've been in business since 2014. January 2014, we started with a whiteboard, and my designers and engineers, what should the world's best water bike look like and perform as? And from there, we launched the company officially, turned the website on in August 2014. And since then, we have customers in 70 countries around the world. We have some of the world's best resorts, Four Seasons, Aman, Ritz-Carlton, Viceroy, many, many 4- and 5-star resorts. We have them up with a number of boat owners, marinas, yacht owners, because the bikes are really easy to stow. They're great to have on a large vessel, be it sailing boat or a motor yacht. And then plenty of, you know, beach and lakefront homeowners. So we're all over the world now, and we're growing rapidly.
Good. Don?
Well, I'm on your website, and I want to tell you it's one of the better product websites I've seen in a long time.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Because you understand, by going through the site, you understand what you're doing, why you do it, et cetera. And it's a nice, we're radio, so we can't really show our audience, but it's really a very interesting product you have. It's one of the reasons we brought you on the program. But my question is, what problems have you run into since starting your business that you've overcome?
Yeah, there's been a lot of challenges that we've overcome. The bike is deceptively simple. When you see it, it's very intuitive. It's a very, you know, elegant design. The form is very sleek and modern, but also very accessible for anyone to get on. But it's very hard to make a bike feel like a bike on the water. It doesn't, just, you know, the Schiller bike doesn't feel like the pedal boat, you know, that they used to ride in Central Park or, you know, from yesteryear. It really feels like a true cycling experience on the water. So the cadence feels like a bike would. And that was a really, you know, long and arduous effort of engineering. And we had many prototypes that, you know, were not to the specification or standards that I wanted as a founder. And, you know, it was hard, and there was no big body of sort of data about water bikes. There's been, you know, many, many clever designs going back to the turn of the century, even very old patents. So people have been trying this for, you know, well over 100 years, if not longer. And I think part of the reason why we haven't seen more of them is, you know, a lot of the, you know, water bike makers to date have really, not focused enough on the design language, really making these look like a sophisticated consumer product, not just something that is nice to, you know, sort of pedal on the water. There's lots of pedal craft out there, but the Schiller bike, you know, really, you know, we took a lot of, engineering changes. And also when you're, you know, having something on the salt water, you know, the bike world doesn't make things to withstand corrosion. So here we are having to, you know, custom fabricate all sorts of, you know, parts and screws. Everything is made with, anodized aluminum and 316 stainless steel. So it's, you know, that was the whole other issue as well. And then, you know, biggest challenge is, you know, people wanting bikes and wanting them right away. You know, when you buy a bike and it's, spring season comes around, you know, our customers, you know, really want to get started. And that's the thing. And I think a lot of startup companies face this, which is being able to, you know, have the, you know, inventory ready to ship. So now we're overcoming, you know, those challenges, and I learned a lot along the way, a great group of advisors that we have and partners. And now we're really scaling up the manufacturing significantly. So hopefully we'll be able to meet global demand.
Where do you manufacture? Here in the States?
You know, we've been manufacturing in the States for a couple of years as a first stage of manufacturing. And this was always the plan of ramping up. And it's been nice to manufacture in California. You know, I think 90%, if not more, of the world's bikes are made in Taiwan. They've just have such, you know, the supply chains are all around Taiwan. So we're manufacturing there as well. Also, you know, Vietnam for the inflatables, South Korea. And it just makes, you know, more sense for us as a business being able to grow and hopefully being able to get our cost of goods down and being able to pass, you know, some of that savings to our customers. So in time, we'll be able to, whether it's this model or another one, have a, you know, a retail price that's more accessible to a greater, you know, swath of people around the country and around the world.
What made you toss in your all in and become an entrepreneur with this? What made you decide to do it, and what did you do before this?
I think, you know, some degree of, I don't want to say insanity, but, you know, the idea was, you know, obsession was more the word. I became obsessed with it. I don't know a better way to describe it. I just felt I had so much fun myself biking on water that I really believed that if I could create something that was, you know, delivered all the things that a good consumer product needs to do, that you know, my family and friends and other people might enjoy it as well. In the beginning, everybody thought this was the dumbest idea in the world. I couldn't raise a single dollar from any, you know, angel investor. I think even my family was leery of the idea, and I really did go all in. I mean, really, you know, put my life savings in, you know, sold the house, and, you know, started to build Schiller bikes, and that was expensive. And, you know, perhaps I was a little bit naive in the early days. You know, my CFO told me, Judah, it's going to take you twice as much time and twice as much money to pull this off. And I think he was right, and maybe even a little bit off. I think it was three times as much money and three times as long. But along the way, we really got lucky, I think, with media. I think people and reporters really enjoyed, you know, seeing the bike and seeing what it holds for, you know, for everyone as a new mode of recreation and fitness and also alternative transportation. And so we got a lot of praise from many different media outlets, and that helped us, you know, bring in the investment capital that we needed. And slowly but surely, you know, like any startup, getting product to market and growing.
No, it's a fascinating, absolutely fascinating product that, you know, you remind me, you know, the story of the ham and egg. The chicken is involved,
uh-huh,
but the pig is committed.
Yes.
Right.
Sounds
that way for you. Dan, you get to ask the last two questions.
Where do you see your company going?
Well, so that's you know, the million-dollar question. You know, I have my perspective, and I mean, my team, and we all sit down, and we just had a great visioning session about the future of Schiller Bikes. And I started this company 4 years ago, now going on 5 years. And now we're really, you know, focusing in a more, you know, laser way about the future. And one of the things that we all agree on is that this is the birth of a new sport. We had our first pro water bike race last June in Monaco, sponsored by Princess Charlene of Monaco. We had 20 pro athletes, including Nico Rosberg, the Formula One champion, Paula Radcliffe, the women's world record marathon runner, Garrett McNamara, big wave surfer, South African gold medal swimming relay team. And it was a phenomenal race, 15 miles from Nice, France into Monte Carlo. It was fast. It was fun. It was exciting to watch. These athletes put, you know, heart, body, and soul into winning. And we've just now given the green light to do a second annual, what's called the Riviera Water Bike Challenge. So it'll happen again this June in Monaco. More racers, a bigger race. And it's something that we're now going to do around the world. So our goal now is to do 1,000 races between now and the 2024 LA Olympics. And our sort of greatest imaginable challenge is that, you know, there'll be a water bike demo at the LA Olympics. So that's where I think it's going. I think we're going to, you know, you put a few people on a bike, 15, 20 people, and you got a great race on your hands. So that's what we're building here.
Who won the Monaco race?
The South African swimming team. Those guys had humongous legs. They were really, really terrific athletes, and they won, and it was all in good spirit and raised a lot of money for charity. So that's another thing that we'll be doing as well, is having our races that we're hosting and also our partners have some great charity rides and hopefully raise you know, significant amounts of funds for a variety of different organizations.
Good. Thank you,
what
sir.
What a clever marketing. Isn't that clever marketing, Dan?
Yep. Yes.
But Judah, my question to you is, why don't you have some of that video footage of that on your site?
So we have some of it on there. I think in the blog section, there's some video. Also, Instagram and Facebook are a great way, social media. Instagram, our handle is at Schiller Bikes, and Facebook, it's Schiller Bikes. And there we have a lot more video readily available. And you can really see the bikes in, you know, 70 countries around the world on our Instagram page. So it's a lot of fun to see people using them in different scenarios.
That's it. Your website again, Judah, for people and how they can reach you?
Yes, it's schillerbikes.com, SCHILLERBIKES.com. Welcome people to come look at the bikes online. If a lot of people email us questions, we're happy to answer any questions. But people should feel really confident at this point that this is a terrific product and in the hands of so many great people and athletes and, you know, of a wide variety of people of all, you know, ages, races, and backgrounds. It's a terrific product.
Well, I won't argue with it. I just think it's a terrific product.
I'm going to be anxious to go to the website and take a look at it, see if I can convince my wife to get me one for my birthday.
Fantastic. Looking forward to seeing you guys riding, and hopefully we can ride together one day.
Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Really fun.
Want to know more about health savings accounts for your company or yourself? Go to 2HSA.com and get a free employer's primer. Health savings accounts are a cost-effective way of offering health care benefits to your employees and yourself. HSAs build retirement funds for your employees, improve morale, and reduce your health care benefit cost. For a free employer guide to HSAs, go to 2HSA.com. That's 2HSA.com.
Dan Perkins here from Recalculating.biz with your featured book, Bob Bethel, a turnaround specialist with lots of success in small business. Bob's new book is Strengthen Your Business, Fail-Proof Strategies for Small Business. His suggestions are easy to understand and very helpful. One insight struck me was that most companies do not have a plan. The old Chinese proverb says, if you don't know where you're going, then any road will take you there, is true today. Bob Bethel's book, Strengthen Your Business, can be found at Amazon.com or can be ordered at your local bookstore. This has been Dan Perkins with your Recalculating.biz featured book.
Dan, our next guest is the CEO of a new type of franchise involving veterinary services. He is Todd Giatrellis, and he's here to tell us about MVS Pet Care. Todd, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Todd, tell us first a little bit about your background before we talk about anything else.
Sure. I was in many years doing franchise consulting for a company that I founded back. It's called the Gates Group. We helped potential franchisees look at different concepts to see what might be a good fit for them. From there, I started and founded a company in 2004 called Flip Flop Shops. That was a nationwide retail chain of franchise stores that sold flip-flops, flip-flops you'd wear on your feet. Grew that to about 250-plus franchises sold and 100 open. And then in 2015, we sold that to a public company. From there, started another franchise concept called Sugar Plum Parties, which is a kids' party business. We currently have that. And then new to our portfolio is a company called MVS Pet Care that we just launched probably about 3 weeks ago that we're real excited about. And that is veterinarians that provide at-home care for pets. So people that want to have a veterinarian come to their home and do not have to worry about going out to a brick-and-mortar vet hospital or vet clinic.
Well, I really want to get into that, but we both do. But before we do, you really believe in the franchising concept. Before we go further, what are the advantages to an individual to looking at a franchise versus starting his or her own business from scratch?
Yeah, well, what we like to say is it lets people be in business for themselves but not by themselves. So having a proven system that has already been created and then helping individuals slot right into that system really can provide them with a much greater success rate than trying to go out on their own and trying to figure out everything that they may not know. So obviously starting up a business is a real daunting task. When you have all the systems in place from how to market and how to get customers and support on the back end, financial support, scheduling support, any support that someone needs, they can get from a franchise system. And we think that that's a great help to make people successful.
I'm going to turn it over to Dan because Dan knows how to kind of get all of these things together. Dan?
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. Todd, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much, Dan.
This is quite a departure from what you've done in the past. It's a franchise, but the subject matter is far from parties. I was just curious of why you chose pet care and veterinarians as to your next venture.
Sure. You know, we really looked at the industry, and we were looking for an industry that's really strong and growing. And the pet industry is. It's a $66 billion industry. We also wanted something a little different, not do another retail venture like we had done with flip-flop shops in the past. Thought it was the right time to get into something that could really provide healthcare to the pets and to people. And we really like the mobile component of it, not having to worry about leases and starting a brick-and-mortar practice. So those were kind of the components that went into when we started thinking about what we wanted to do next. And we really love the industry. We love what it stands for. And spending on pets right now is at an all-time high. So we think that we're hitting it at the right time, Dan.
Do you think that this is, by extension, in pet care, of what is happening in personal care, with the concierge practice for doctors?
Yeah, I think so. You know, we looked at it, and actually one of my partners is in on the human side of healthcare, the pediatric side. And we even kicked around, you know, do we want to go back to the way it was when I was growing up, and I'm dating myself, but where doctors actually came to people's homes. And if you look at urgent cares, there's a lot of urgent care practices that are franchised. And I think that you could easily have this on the human side too, where you're doing doctors that go right to people's homes and doing the house calls. It's all about convenience now. So, you know, we looked at the what was going on the human side. I think that was a big factor on what we did on the veterinarian side. And it's a lot easier from a barrier standpoint to be dealing with pets than it is to deal with human beings.
Well, that's probably true. So let's look at some numbers. If I just look at the office visit component of going to see a vet, how does your pricing compare to that basic cost?
Yeah, so for us, the extra pricing that we get for coming to people's homes, and this, of course, depends on what market you're in. In the market we're in the Boston area, it's $110. And in different markets, it would probably be substantially lower, maybe anywhere from 60 to 110. So that's the only component that's different. So you are paying for the convenience, and you are paying that fee. Everything else, the numbers are just about the same. The typical visit could be anywhere from $65 to $85, and then you'd add on any lab work or any vaccinations that may happen. So all the stuff is pretty similar, except for that added pricing for the at-home visit.
Now, if I look at your business model, when you use mobile veterinary services, when you say mobile, does he or she have a mobile facility that provides certain level of health care in that facility, or do they just simply come in their cars, and if you have to go to the next level, you have to go back to an office?
Yeah, so for us, we can do quite a few things in the home. If it's a surgical procedure, then we would refer out to a veterinary hospital. But beyond really surgical procedures, we can handle most everything else right in an individual's household.
Do you carry portable X-ray in your mobile vehicles?
So yeah, we currently do not. There are mobile X-ray units that can be purchased, and you could do mobile X-ray. For us right now, we've decided that I guess there should have been a caveat to that. Mobile X-ray and surgical stuff would get referred out.
So the veterinarians that you're using, are these men and women who have an existing practice and are looking for a different way of doing business, or are these vets out of vet school who are looking to establish themselves?
So right now we partnered up with one veterinarian right outside of Boston that actually had an existing house call practice for about 13 years. So that's kind of our corporate model that we call. And since we just launched right now, we're talking to individuals that are on both sides of things, Dan. Some of them have existing house call practices right now, but need the support in the scheduling and the back end office management piece that we can help to try to get their business, the numbers up. Some people that we're talking to are going to be recent graduates, and some people are going to be working for veterinary hospitals that we talk to that have been there for 2 or 3 years that aren't partners in there. They're not going to be have any type of ownership, and they want to have the ability to go out on their own. So those are really the three people groups that we talk to.
My memory is not as good as it used to be, but I seem to recall that in the Boston area, there is a place called Tufts University.
Yes.
And that they have a pretty good national reputation veterinary school, if I recall.
Yeah, they have one of the top ones in the country. They've also got, you know, a really great undergrad program too, and a dental program, and then the extension is the veterinary school. So we've actually already reached out to Tufts, and we'll be sending them some information to try to talk to some of the upcoming graduates.
So you're looking at those people that are graduating from Tufts, and you're showing them an alternative business model. How hard do you think it's going to be to find that mobile vet person, customers?
On the customer side, well, the individual, Dr. Gransky, that we partnered up with, literally had to stop advertising through Google and Facebook, and take the magnetic billboard off his car because he was inundated with patients. So I think that I think there's a huge market out there. I think that people want the convenience. We'll also go to people's businesses, so they could a lot of businesses now are more cat and dog friendly, and you know it really offers a solution for people instead of having to take a day off, or if they're working from home, we can come to, we'll come to the home while they're working. So for us, with everyone commuting less and staying home more, we think it's a perfect avenue.
How much do you think there's an issue going on in personal care, at least that I've been reading about, of actual shortage of doctors now? Obamacare has forced a lot of doctors to retire because they don't want to put up with all the regulations. So a lot of doctors just left the practice, and the medical schools are not turning out enough doctors to replace the ones that are retiring. Are you seeing a similar situation in there's a shortage of veterinarians,
from people that we speak to, and we've talked to a lot of veterinarian recruiters too, who would partner up with us to try to help us find some individuals that might be interested in owning your own business. You know, there's about 4,000 graduates a year from veterinary school, and I think that demand far outweighs the supply of doctors. So yeah, I think that it's difficult right now to find good doctors. But you know, another thing is that there's been so much consolidation in the brick and mortar side or the hospital side, with big companies like VCA hospitals and Banfield coming in and gobbling up a lot of the smaller practices. The people don't have the ability to go out on to be on their own anymore. You know, so they may have taken a job with the hope of being a partner someday, and a lot of those hopes are dashed now. So we want to give those people the ability to actually be a business owner without having to spend a lot of money that they may not have to start it.
What kind of money do you think a mobile veterinary practice can generate for a veterinarian?
Well, I can go by what our partner generates, and that was himself being a single practitioner, working about 4 to 4.5 days. And in 2016, they did about $850,000. And he got so busy he had to hire a second veterinarian to actually help him out. Last year, they did about $1,050,000. So,
and how much is that? That's all mobile? That's all mobile?
That's all at home. Yep, there's no brick and mortar component to that at all. So, you know, we're hoping with the ramp up time that, you know, people obviously when they start, they're booking 2 or 3 appointments a day and then can ramp up to the point that they've got a practice in excess of $500,000.
So why wouldn't your mobile visit concept work with general practitioners?
On the human side, you mean?
Uh-huh.
I think it absolutely can. I just think that you've got health insurance issues that make it far more difficult, and you've got a much larger when you're looking at a lot of the insurances for the doctors and the type of insurance that they need to cover themselves, it's a lot more expensive. So, you know, if you look at on the human side, if someone has health insurance, sometimes they're capped at $100 a visit if they're on Medicare, Medicaid, and that's very difficult for this model. So you know, we want to be able to go on our average visit with the visit and the typical appointment is about $400 per appointment. So on the human side, it would actually be very difficult to get to that number. So you're looking at you know, the liability insurance can be $20,000 to $30,000, where on the pet side, it's about $300 because pets are not
$300.
Yes, you know, pets are considered property, so you don't have that malpractice insurance that you have on the human side.
Yeah, interesting. Don?
So those were the big things that we looked at. You know, and then obviously going through the insurance companies to get your payments. So, you know,
right.
This business, it's credit card, you know, cash or check right at the time of service. And if people do have insurance through providers that have pet insurance, they reimburse the client directly. So, you know, that way our veterinarian is always getting paid right on the spot, and we're not waiting for any funds to come in.
Don, can I ask one more question before you? Before I turn it over to you? I just thought.
Of course.
I've been reading, as we were talking about the shortage of doctors, one of the areas that is extremely short is in the outer regions, in the county area, away from the big cities, away from the urban sprawl. And there are many areas of this country that are very rural in nature, and hospital, those doctors are retiring. As the baby boomers are retiring, they're not able to replace them. It would seem that there would be an opportunity for a mobile practice in those areas that could carve out special interest I have great concerns that maybe we're not turning out enough veterinarians. With the people retiring at 10,000 a day for more years, a lot of professionals, doctors and lawyers and nurses and school teachers and firemen and policemen, are going to be retiring in huge numbers, but not being replaced. And we're gonna pay a price for not having enough people. Maybe things will have to change at the concierge concept, along with your mobile practice, may see a new beginning.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's very difficult, and it's stressful financially to open up a practice. And that's why I think a lot of people aren't going into it anymore. So people that do retire, they may, you know, once that shuts down, that's the end of it. You know, one thing we like about the mobile component is it doesn't have to be that way. You know, to get a mobile practice up and going, it's about it's a $25,000 franchise fee, and then another $25,000 or so in supplies, from vaccinations to some of the supplies, a laptop that you go in with. And really some simple things. So really for $50,000, you can get up and running. And, you know, there isn't anything, as you guys know, in the franchise world that can turn out the type of numbers that this can. You can get started for, you know, $50,000 to $75,000.
So for the newly graduated vet who's got a lot of college debt, can you help him with financing for his franchise setup?
So we can help him from an SBA side. And we can help them with lenders that do that. We don't provide any financing ourselves.
Okay. Thank you. Don, back to you.
I don't know, Dan. You asked a lot of questions that I wanted to ask, which is good. I guess I want to go a different direction. Why not, if you're a new graduate, you don't go and try to buy a practice from someone else, or join a practice and eventually earn it out?
So you can do that. You know, start your own practice. If it's a brick and mortar, it's going to probably cost about $500,000. So I don't think a lot of the graduating vets have that type of money. You can certainly go work for someone else, but with the consolidation, with, you know, a couple of big companies buying up a lot of the the personal practices, those opportunities are really slim now. So that's really hurt people's ability to be their own owner and to go on their own. So that's why we think that this really fills that void of helping someone do it and giving them a system to how to be successful. So, you know, for them to come out and just do it on their own, I think would be really difficult. We've got 13 years of background of do's and don'ts and, you know, and different ways to help them succeed. So, you know, I think it's increasingly more difficult for people to ever be an owner in this field because of the consolidation.
Well, I saw recently how many dogs and cats Americans have as pets. I can't remember the numbers, but they were astronomical. So clearly there's a...
100 really? Million. And Barbara Streisand is cloning her own dog.
I think the average household that has a pet has 2.3 pets, I guess is the statistic. And last year was the first year that people spent more on pets than on their kids. So that tells you what's going on right now in the pet industry.
No, you're clearly catching a wave. I'm sitting here kind of flabbergasted a little bit. When I first read about you and your concept, I just couldn't believe it. But I myself haven't had a pet for a long time. But then when I've talked to other people, and they say if a vet came to my house, because their toughest thing is catching their dog to get them to the vet, and in effect, you're eliminating that great difficulty. Am I correct?
Yeah, there's a lot of stress on the pet owner and actually on the pet too, especially with cats, getting them to a vet, or with elderly dogs that could be really heavy, and it's difficult for men and women to get them to the veterinarians all the time. So, yeah, this is very helpful for them, and it causes a lot less stress for the animal. You know, unfortunately, a big part of our business too is euthanasia, and that's a piece too where people are really uncomfortable. They have to put their pet to sleep, unfortunately, of going into a real sterile environment and putting their pet down. And we actually go right in the home, and it's far more comforting, and it makes it, I think, a little more palatable for them as a pet owner.
I was going to say, I went through that, our last pet, the last dog we ever had, and having to put her down, and that was just emotionally crushing. It was a very difficult thing. I have an analogy for you. I don't know whether you can use it or not, but I won't charge you for it, even if you use it. What comes to mind is that you're creating the Uber of pet care.
Yeah. I mean, we like to think in some ways that we are making it affordable and letting and having everyone have the ability to have a veterinarian come right to their home. Much like Uber's created that with people who want to ride whenever they want one.
Yeah, and the other part of it is that if you want to, if in the case of Uber, if you want to buy a medallion in places like New York and Newark, they cost hundreds of thousands of dollars to buy, and you can have a taxi business without the expense of paying for that license or that medallion. Here you can have a veterinary practice without, as you said, putting up $500,000 to buy into a business or buy a business or start a business when you can do it for $50,000 and you're on your way.
Exactly. That's what we loved about this business.
What do you do when you have to do major surgery? Do you go to
you refer out to a veterinary hospital.
So the vet makes a diagnosis, and if it needs surgery, then he recommends you go to the local veterinary hospital for surgery.
Yeah, we'll have any veterinarian that we sign on, we'll have relationships with two or three of the local veterinarian hospitals.
Okay.
Where are you now located? Are you in the Boston area? Where are your franchises now?
So we're located right outside of Boston, Mass. Our office is in Arlington, and our veterinarian practice is out of Natick, Massachusetts right now. And we're selling territories throughout the country.
And your website again for people who want to know more?
Sure. It's www.mvspetcare.com.
Well, would you spell it out for our audience?
Sure. MVSPETCARE.com. And our phone number is 866 VET to PET. VET number 2 PET.
Thank you so much. A link to your website will be on recalculating.biz website tonight. Thank you so much for being with us and bringing this fascinating franchise idea. Dan, you get to say the last word.
I think it's a great idea, and I wish you all the best. And you'll have to come back in six months to a year and tell us how many franchises you've sold and how many pets are out there being cared for by your system. And it's a pleasure to have you with us.
I would love to, guys. Thank you so much for having me, and can't wait to reconnect with you in a few months.
Tell me, Dan, tell me about your latest book.
My current book that's coming out, I should say, is Why Can't Grammy Remember Me? And it's really the first book written for children between the ages of 9 and 12 and their families dealing with dementia. Dementia is a growing problem with the elderly in the United States and around the world. And we are not very well informed about what's going on, what's happening. So I wrote this book in the form of a mystery. And I have two little girls, 9 and 12, who have a magical power to be able to seem to be able to find things that are lost. And so they go to their dads and moms and they say, you know, we work all over the neighborhood helping people find things, and we seem to find things. And their dad says, yes, you have a magical talent to do that. And they said, we'd like to start a business to see if we can help other people. So they decided to start a business. The two girls' name are Hudson and Charlotte. And they start H&C's Lost and Found. If you've lost it, we find it. And so they build a business, and they convince the dads to build them an office and a treehouse in the backyard. And they get busy making posters and flyers trying to get customers. And their dads take them downtown, and they put them in the windows and on the telephone poles and light poles. And they go home, and first week goes by, and nobody comes. And the second week and third week, and nobody comes. They're really, really dejected. And the fourth week comes, and there's a knock at the door. And they walk over and open the door, and there's a young man standing there with one of their flyers in his hands. And he says to them, my dad says the reason why my Grammy can't remember me is because she's lost her memory. And your flyer says you find things that are lost. Can you find my Grammy's memory? Well, they don't know anything about memory. So they take his name and they go see their dads to see what can happen. And the story evolves into how they learn about what dementia is and what's going on in the body when somebody has dementia. And then they decide, while they can't find their customer's memory, they can help him build the tools to retain her in his memory. And so at the end of the book, there are about 10 to 12, 13 things that families can do together to work on to preserve the memory of grandma and grandpa so the generations can know who these people were. And that's the story.
What a great book. When will it be available, and how can people get it?
Well, it'll be available on Amazon.com. A lot of people who have read it, who've had moms and dads that have been stricken with Alzheimer's and dementia, tell me that they really now begin to understand what's happening in grandma's brain. And we took a different approach. Rather than do the typical brain cross-section, I work with the artist, and we design highways in the brain. And there's a brain of one of the little girls and the brain of Grammy. They both have highways, roads. But where the girl's brain, everything is green and go. Grammy's brain is full of no left turns, do not enter, stop, no right turns. So all of the messages that need to come from our brain get screwed up, and we can't function. Great illustrations, though. Wonderful illustrations.
Well, say goodbye, Dan.
All right.
Time for us to go.
Thank you for joining us. And by the way, if you didn't hear all of today's show, you can go to recalculating.biz. And you can pick up this show and past shows to expand your knowledge as becoming more successful entrepreneurs. Thank you for joining us, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for joining us on Recalculating. We hope the information you received on today's episode was helpful to you in starting and growing your business. Please go to our website, recalculating.biz, to contact us, to listen to past shows, and see special offers. Until next time, remember, if you grow, we grow. Join us next week for more helpful ideas to make your business a great success. Recalculating, a program designed to help you be successful.